We shall meet again. Take care of yourselves and keep away from Orthanc. Goodbye.
Treebeard was very thoughtful after Gandalf had gone. He'd evidently learned a lot in a short time and was digesting it. He looked at us and said,
Well, I find you're not such hasty folk as I thought. You said much less than you might, but not more than you should. This is a bundle of news and no mistake. Well, now Treebeard must get busy again.
Before he went, we got a little news out of him, and it didn't cheer us up at all. But for the moment we thought more about you three than about Frodo and Sam, or about poor Boromir. For we gathered that there was a great battle going on, or soon would be, and that you were in it and might never come out of it.
"Horns will help," said Treebeard.
Then he went away, and we didn't see him again until this morning. It was deep night. We lay on top of a pile of stone, and we could see nothing beyond it. Mist or shadows blotted out everything like a great blanket all round us. The air seemed hot and heavy, and it was full of rustlings, creakings, and a murmur like voices passing. I think that hundreds more of the Huorns must have been passing by to help in the battle. Later there was a great rumble of thunder away south, and flashes of lightning far away across Rohan. Every now and then we could see mountain peaks, miles and miles away, stab out suddenly, black and white, and then vanish. And behind us there were noises like thunder in hills, but different. At times the whole valley echoed. It must have been about midnight when the Ents broke the dams and poured all the gathered waters through a gap in the northern wall, down into Isengard. The Huorn dark had passed, and the thunder had rolled away. The moon was sinking behind the western mountains. Isengard began to fill up with black, creeping streams and pools. They glittered in the last light of the moon as they spread over the plain. Every now and then the waters found their way down into some shaft or spout hole. Great white steams hissed up. Smoke rose in billows. There were explosions and gusts of fire. One great coil of vapour went whirling up, twisting round and round Orthanc, until it looked like a tall peak of cloud, fiery underneath and moonlit above. And still more water poured in, until at last Isengard looked like a huge flat saucepan, all steaming and bubbling.
"We saw a cloud of smoke and steam from the south last night, when we came to the mouth of Nan Cúrinir," said Aragorn. "We feared that Saruman was brewing some new devilry for us."
"Not he," said Pippin.
"He was probably choking and not laughing any more. By the morning, yesterday morning, the water had sunk down into all the holes, and there was a dense fog. We took refuge in that guard room over there, and we had rather a fright. The lake began to overflow and pour out through the old tunnel, and the water was rapidly rising up the steps. We thought we were going to get caught like orcs in a hole, but we found a winding stair at the back of the storeroom that brought us out at the top of the arch. It was a squeeze to get out, as the passages had been cracked and half blocked with fallen stone near the top. There we sat high up above the floods and watched the drowning of Isengard. The Ents kept on pouring in more water till all the fires were quenched and every cave filled. The fog slowly gathered together and steamed up into a huge umbrella of cloud. It must have been a mile high. In the evening there was a great rainbow over the eastern hills, and then the sunset was blotted out by a thick drizzle on the mountainsides. It all went very quiet. A few wolves howled mournfully, far away. The Ents stopped the inflow in the night and sent the Isen back into its old course. And that was the end of it all. Since then the water's been sinking again. There must be outlets somewhere from the caves underneath, I think. If Saruman peeps out of any of his windows, it must look an untidy, dreary mess. We felt very lonely. Not even a visible Ent to talk to in all the ruin, and no news. We spent the night up on top there, above the arch, and it was cold and damp, and we didn't sleep.
We had a feeling that anything might happen at any minute. Saruman still in his tower. There was a noise in the night, like a wind coming up the valley. I think the Ents and Huorns that had been away came back then. But where they've all gone to now, I don't know. It was a misty, moisty morning when we climbed down and looked round again, and nobody was about. And that is about all there is to tell. It seems almost peaceful now after all the turmoil, and safer too somehow, since Gandalf came back. I could sleep. They all fell silent for a while. Gimli refilled his pipe.
"There's one thing I wonder about," he said as he lit it with his flint and tinder. "Wormtongue, you told Théoden he was with Saruman. How did he get there?"
"Oh yes, I forgot about him," said Pippin. "He didn't get here till this morning. We'd just lit the fire and had some breakfast when Treebeard appeared again. We heard him homing and calling our names outside."
"I've just come round to see how you're faring, my lads," he said, "and to give you some news. Huorns have come back. All's well. Aye, very well indeed."
He laughed and slapped his thighs.
"No more orcs in Isengard, no more axes, and there will be folk coming up from the south before the day is old, some that you may be glad to see."
He'd hardly said that when we heard the sound of hoofs on the road. We rushed out before the gates, and I stood and stared, half expecting to see Strider and Gandalf come riding up at the head of an army. But out of the mist there rode a man on an old, tired horse, and he looked a queer, twisted sort of creature himself. There was no one else. When he came out of the mist and suddenly saw all the ruin and wreckage in front of him, he sat and gaped, and his face went almost green. He was so bewildered that he didn't seem to notice us at first. When he did, he gave a cry and tried to turn his horse round and ride off. But Treebeard took three strides, put out a long arm, and lifted him out of the saddle. His horse bolted in terror, and he grovelled on the ground. He said he was Grima, friend and counsellor of the king, and had been sent with important messages from Théoden to Saruman. "No one else would dare to ride through the open land so full of foul orcs," he said, "so I was sent. And I've had a perilous journey, and I'm hungry and weary. I fled far north out of my way, pursued by wolves." I caught the sideways look he gave to Treebeard, and I said to myself, "Liar." Treebeard looked at him in his long, slow way for several minutes, till the wretched man was squirming on the floor. Then at last he said,
"I was expecting you, Master Wormtongue."
The man started at that name.
"Gandalf got here first, so I know as much about you as I need, and I know what to do with you. Put all the rats in one trap," says Gandalf, "and I will. I am the master of Isengard now, but Saruman is locked in his tower, and you can go there and give him all the messages that you can think of."
"Let me go, let me go," said Wormtongue. "I know the way."
"You knew the way, I don't doubt," said Treebeard, "but things have changed here a little. Go and see."
He let Wormtongue go, and he limped off through the arch, with us close behind, until he came inside the ring and could see all the floods that lay between him and Orthanc. Then he turned to us.
"Let me go away," he whined. "Let me go away. My messages are useless now." "They are indeed," said Treebeard. "But you have only two choices, to stay with me until Gandalf and your master arrive, or to cross the water. Which will you have?"
The man shivered at the mention of his master, and put a foot into the water, but he drew back.
"I cannot swim," he said. "The water is not deep," said Treebeard. "It is dirty, but that will not harm you, Master Wormtongue. In you go now."
With that the wretch floundered off into the flood. It rose up nearly to his neck before he got too far away for me to see him. The last I saw of him was clinging to some old barrel or piece of wood. But Treebeard waded after him and watched his progress.
"Well, he has gone in," he said when he returned. "I saw him crawling up the steps like a draggled rat. There's someone in the tower still. A hand came out and pulled him in. so there he is, and I hope the welcome is to his liking. Now I must go and wash myself clean of the slime. I'll be away up on the north side, if anyone wants to see me. There's no clean water down here fit for an ant to drink, or to bathe in. So I will ask you two lads to keep a watch at the gate for the folk that are coming. There'll be the Lord of the Fields of Rohan. Mark you, you must welcome him as well as you know how. His men have fought a great fight with the orcs. Maybe you know the right fashion of men's words for such a lord better than ants. There have been many lords in the green fields in my time, and I've never heard their speech or their names. They will be wanting man-food, and you know all about that, I guess. So find what you think is fit for a king to eat, if you can.
And that is the end of the story. Though I should like to know who this Wormtongue is. Was he really the king's counsellor?
He was, said Aragorn, and also Saruman's spy and servant in Rohan. Fate hasn't been kinder to him than he deserves. The sight of the ruin of all that he thought so strong and magnificent must have been almost punishment enough. But I fear that worse awaits him.
Yes, I don't suppose Treebeard sent him to Orthanc out of kindness, said Merry. He seemed rather grimly delighted with the business, and was laughing to himself when he went to get his bathe and drink. We spent a busy time after that, searching the flotsam and rummaging about. We found two or three storerooms in different places nearby, above the flood level, but Treebeard sent some ents down, and they carried off a great deal of the stuff.
"We want man food for 25," the ent said.
"So you can see that somebody had counted your company carefully before you arrived. You three were evidently meant to go with the great people. But you wouldn't have fared any better. We kept as good as we sent, I promise you. Better, because we sent no drink." "What about drink?" I said to the ents.
"There is water of Ison," they said, "and that is good enough for ents and men."
"But I hope that the ents may have found time to brew some of their draughts from the mountain springs, and we shall see Gandalf's beard curling when he returns." After the ents had gone, we felt tired and hungry. But we didn't grumble. Our labours had been well rewarded. It was through our search for man-food that Pippin discovered the prize of all the flotsam, those hornblower barrels. "Pipeweed is better after food," said Pippin. That is how the situation arose.
"We understand it all perfectly now," said Gimli.
"All except one thing," said Aragorn. "Leaf from the South Farthing in Isengard. The more I consider it, the more curious I find it. I've never been in Isengard, but I've journeyed in this land, and I know well the empty countries that lie between Rohan and the Shire.
Neither goods nor folk have passed that way for many a long year, not openly.
Saruman had secret dealings with someone in the Shire, I guess. Wormtongues may be found in other houses than King Theoden's. Was there a date on the barrels?"
"Yes," said Pippin. "It was the 1417 crop. That is last year's. No, the year before, of course, now. A good year."
"Ah, well, whatever evil was afoot is over now, I hope. Or else it's beyond our reach at present," said Aragorn. "Yet I think I shall mention it to Gandalf, small matter though it may seem among his great affairs."
"I wonder what he's doing," said Merry. "The afternoon is getting on. Let's go and look around. You can enter Isengard now at any rate, Strider, if you want to. But it's not a very cheerful sight."
Chapter 10 The Voice of Saruman. They passed through the ruined tunnel and stood upon a heap of stones, gazing at the dark rock of Orthanc, and its many windows, a menace still in the desolation that lay all about it. The waters had now nearly all subsided. Here and there gloomy pools remained, covered with scum and wreckage. But most of the wide circle was bare again, a wilderness of slime and tumbled rock, pitted with blackened holes and dotted with posts and pillars leaning drunkenly this way and that. At the rim of the shattered bowl there lay vast mounds and slopes,
like the shingles cast up by a great storm, and beyond them the green and tangled valley ran up into the long ravine between the dark arms of the mountains. Across the waste they saw riders picking their way. They were coming from the north side, and already they were drawing near to Orthanc.
"There is Gandalf, and Theoden and his men," said Legolas. "Let's go and meet them."
"Walk warily," said Merry. "There are loose slabs that may tilt up and throw you down into a pit if you don't take care." They followed what was left of the road from the gates to Orthanc, going slowly, for the flagstones were cracked and slimed. The riders, seeing them approach, halted under the shadow of the rock and waited for them. Gandalf rode forward to meet them.
"Well, Treebeard and I have had some interesting discussions and made a few plans," he said, "and we've all had some much-needed rest. Now we must be going on again. I hope you companions have all rested too and refreshed yourselves."
"We have," said Merry, "but our discussions began and ended in smoke. Still we feel less ill-disposed towards Saruman than we did."
"Do you indeed?" said Gandalf. "Well, I don't. I've now a last task to do before I go. I must pay Saruman a farewell visit. Dangerous and probably useless, but it must be done. Those of you who wish may come with me, but beware, and don't jest. This isn't the time for it." "I'll come," said Gimli. "I wish to see him and learn if he really looks like you."
"And how would you learn that, Master Dwarf?" said Gandalf. "Saruman could look like me, in your eyes, if it suited his purpose with you."
"And are you yet wise enough to detect all his counterfeits?"
"Well, we shall see, perhaps. He may be shy of showing himself before many different eyes together, but I've ordered all the Ents to remove themselves from sight, so perhaps we shall persuade him to come out."
"What's the danger?" asked Pippin.
"Will he shoot at us, and pour fire out of the windows, or can he put a spell on us from a distance?"
"The last is more likely, if you ride to his door with a light heart," said Gandalf. "But there's no knowing what he can do, or may choose to try. A wild beast cornered is not safe to approach, and Saruman has powers you don't guess. Beware of his voice."
They came now to the foot of Orthanc. It was black, and the rock gleamed as if it were wet. The many faces of the stone had sharp edges, as though they had been newly chiselled. A few scorings, and small flake-like splinters near the base, were all the marks that it bore of the fury of the Ents. On the eastern side, in the angle of two piers, there was a great door, high above the ground, and over it was a shuttered window, opening upon a balcony hedged with iron bars. Up to the threshold of the door there mounted a flight of 27 broad stairs, hewn by some unknown art of the same black stone. This was the only entrance to the tower, but many tall windows were cut with deep embrasures in the climbing walls. Far up they peered like little eyes in the sheer faces of the horns. At the foot of the stairs Gandalf and the king dismounted.
"I'll go up," said Gandalf. "I've been in Orthanc, and I know my peril."
"And I too will go up," said the king. "I'm old, and fear no peril any more. I wish to speak with the enemy who has done me so much wrong. Eomer shall come with me, and see that my aged feet do not falter."
"As you will," said Gandalf. "Aragorn shall come with me. Let the others await us at the foot of the stairs. They'll hear and see enough, if there's anything to hear or see." "Nay," said Gimli, "Legolas and I wish for a closer view. We alone here represent our kindreds. We also will come behind."
"Come then," said Gandalf, and with that he climbed the steps, and Theoden went beside him. The riders of Rohan sat uneasily upon their horses, on either side of the stair, and looked up darkly at the great tower, fearing what might befall their lord. Merry and Pippin sat on the bottom step, feeling both unimportant and unsafe.
"Half a sticky mile from here to the gate," muttered Pippin.
I wish I could slip off back to the guardroom.